name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Thanks for slowing down for a moment to listen to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm James Jesse.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. So we'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us on our new podcast. Now, if you found us due to our Green Justice Arrow podcast or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files podcast, welcome back. And for all our new listeners, I think you'll find that Jay and I offer kind of a unique perspective and a refreshing voice on the superhero genre.
I have a very refreshing voice.
Yes,
I'm refreshing you now.
So, I'm very excited about it. I am so excited about this show.
I am too. And, you know, the summer just kind of made me more excited because I think they teased just enough to keep my appetite up. And every convention that they attended made me a little bit more excited.
Well, and I mean, this is really the little podcast that should never have been, because I think you and I both were saying all last season, it's like we knew Flash was coming. It's like, no, can't do a podcast. And then end of Arrow season two, and we were both like, yeah, I think we're going to do a podcast. Yeah.
I think we knew it in our heart all along, don't you?
Yeah.
Everybody kind of gives me a funny look now.
I think we kept up the energy ourselves this summer with a little project we were working on here, which is kind of what makes up this show.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, this show, our zeroth, you know, episode show, we're going to do things just a little bit different for this episode, right? So why don't you tell them a little bit what we're going to do?
Well, instead of covering an episode of the TV show The Flash from the CW, the new show, because it hasn't aired yet, we want to get everybody excited and give a little background about the previous Flash show that some of you may have missed. If you were born any time within the last 20 years, you probably have never gone back and watched this. But there were 22 episodes from the 1990-1991 CBS television season, and it was called The Flash. It aired between September 20th, 1990, and May 18th, 1991. And we're going to go over all 22 episodes here in our normal time frame of about an hour. So a lot of stuff to talk about. Just to give a little brief background, the show originally aired on Thursdays versus The Cosby Show on CBS and the newly created Simpsons on Fox. So
there
was a lot.
That show's never going to last.
Yeah.
Animated series for adults, it's not going to last.
It was up against some tough competition there, and then it moved around a little bit as well once they realized they couldn't compete with those. And then also, the Flash costume, which took some cues from the Batman costume from the 1989
Tim Burton
Batman film that was out. Yeah, the Tim Burton film. Dave Stevens, who many of you may know as the creator of The Rocketeer, both the movie and the comic book, more precisely. He did the original designs for the Flash costume for this show. So what's cool is the producers got a lot of comic book-related individuals to work on the series as writers, designers, and, you know, similar folk and stuff like that. So, but like I said, we're going to go through and give you a quick rundown of all 22 episodes here in just a second. But Josh, why don't you give a little news about the new 2014 Flash?
That's right. It is coming quickly, and there's two pretty important pieces of news that we wanted to share before the series actually started. So, first of all, there is a season zero digital comic that you can get. It was released on September 8th of this year, 2014. And it's got things that are not in the show, right?
Yeah, it's a little setup. Well, it's... it kind of takes place in between, I'm guessing between like the pilot episode of The Flash and probably the second episode. It's, but it's got things that are not going to happen in the show and some other setup and things like that. So,
that's right.
It's pretty cool. And, they're doing at least two digital issues, and I think they'll combine them into a print issue, which will be out, towards the end of the year here.
Yeah. And they did a similar thing with, Arrow.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's just – it's another way for them to kind of hype up this new show and their DC Comics TV shows, which they seem to be building their own tiny little universe on the TV screen. So,
oh, there's rumors today about two other DC shows that they're looking at to do maybe next season. So
well,
let's not get into that today, but
no,
we can talk about that in the future.
That's a good conversation.
That's a podcast unto itself.
No more. But well, so the series premiere of The Flash is going to be on October 7th of this year, 2014. It's going to be on at 8 p.m. on the CW, just like The Flash is. Now, let's see, that's 8 p.m.
8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific.
And Pacific. Okay. So I believe here I'm at Mountain Time, and I believe it's going to be on at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, usually 7 Mountain and Central then.
Mm-hmm. So
yep. So that'll be on Tuesdays, and Arrow will be back on Wednesdays then.
That's right. All right. So before we get into The Flash with Grant Gustin, let's take a look at the very short-lived series with John Wesley Shipp from 1990, okay?
All right,
so we're going to go in order, and we're going to start with the pilot, which they named Pilot. So that's a creative name there. Now, this aired on September 20th, 1990. Let me give you a quick summary, and then we'll talk about a few bits in this. The pilot was 2 hours long. So here's a summary of the whole show. Police lab scientist and poster boy for daddy issues, Barry Allen, he's struck by lightning and thrown into a shelf of chemicals, giving him powers of super speed. But this power, as you know, came with some side effects. The super metabolism needs to feed for speed. Barry's powers aren't consistent, and they're not always reliable. And then after his brother Jay is killed by a gang of disgruntled motorcyclists led by former partner of Jay.
No, I'm right here.
Yeah.
Oh, his brother Jay. Got it.
Yes, Barry's brother Jay.
Got it.
Barry vows to use those powers for good, you know, to help. So with the help of a Star Lab scientist named Tina McGee and her experimental red Russian and very buff diving suit, the Flash begins to protect the streets of Central City. So, you know, very, very typical origin story for the Barry Allen Flash that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed, you mentioned that the pilot was 2 hours and all the rest of the episodes are 1 hour. What I noticed is that a 1 hour show nowadays is about 42 minutes. A 1 hour show back in 1990 is 46 to 48 minutes long. That means we've added about, 4 to 6 minutes of commercials in the last 24 years here. So
I believe that very strongly.
Yeah. But it means, you know, sometimes I thought the episodes were going to be over quick, and then they just kind of kept going. I'm like, wow, we got a lot of time to fill here. So, you know, yeah. Stuff has to get tightened up for the new ones.
It does, but I also think that kind of quickens the pace, because I noticed that might have helped, actually, some of these episodes. But,
yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah, definitely.
That's okay. You know, I guess they've added a few commercials, or if you watch Game of Thrones, they've just added like a 10-minute theme song, so.
Yeah. All right. So along with each of these summaries, we're going to give you some little bits of trivia from the episode and some other things that, you know, guest stars, some other things you may want to know about. So this series stars John Wesley Shipp, who is going to be appearing in The Flash show with Grant Gustin, playing Barry Allen's dad. So he played The Flash in 1990, and now he's going to be playing The Flash's dad in 2014, which is really cool. Amanda Pays plays Tina McGee, who is in the comic books Wally West's the Flash's girlfriend, but here they've kind of combined the best attributes of Wally West and Barry Allen. And then, and she's the only other person at this point that knows Barry is the Flash. You may know Amanda Pays from the Max Headroom TV show from the late 80s. And then Barry's partner in the crime lab is played by Alex Desert. I never knew how to pronounce his name even back then, so I apologize, Alex. Now, as you mentioned, Barry's brother, Jay, is probably named after Jay Garrick, who was the Golden Age Flash, but he's Jay Allen in this, played by veteran character actor Tim Thomerson from such awesome roles as Dollman and some other B films and stuff like that. Jay's wife is named Nora. In the comics, Nora is the name of Barry's mom, but the dad, at least, is named Henry, which is consistent with the comics. Henry is played by veteran character actor M. Emmett Walsh from Blade Runner and Blood Simple.
Ah, classic 70s and 80s actor.
Yeah. And then we've got Iris West, who is in the comics, Barry's longtime girlfriend, as she makes her first and only appearance in the show.
That really shocked me, that that is like the only time Iris West was in the show.
Now, it's interesting. In an article that I read in Starlog from this time, I think it was like issue 140, the producers were saying that they planned to bring her in and out throughout the entire series. But obviously, they changed their minds on that. Barry has a kind of a different girlfriend off and on throughout the entire episode, or throughout the entire series, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, it was the early 90s. He was a ladies' man.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I mean, he was kind of a hunk. What's interesting is he's going to be a little bit older than Grant Gustin. So Grant is, I'm guessing, like he's in his mid to late 20s, I think. And John Wesley Shipp was in his mid 30s at the time that he did the series here.
Yeah,
a little more mature Barry Allen in some aspects, and other times he was kind of immature. It was weird. Two of my favorite characters, I loved these guys originally when they aired. There are two police officers that are pretty much in every episode, and they're the comic relief. And these guys are great, Officer Murphy and Bellows. And they're seen throughout the series, and they play off each other. And at one point, Bellows actually thinks Murphy, who's this older cop, is actually the Flash. And they go through all sorts of, you know, misunderstandings together, and they're cracking jokes all the time and stuff like that. Alex Azur actually was the voice of Nick Fury on Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes and a Wolverine animated series. So he actually has gone on to do some other things in superhero-dom. And then the bike gang, there's a biker chick, Pike's girlfriend, played by Lysia Naff. Now, that name might not be recognizable, and she may not be recognizable with her top on, but she played the three-breasted Martian woman from 1990's Total Recall. So
that's right. I remember. Now, trying to remember the beginning of the series here. How many breasts did she have in this series?
Pretty sure she just had two.
Just the two in this one. Okay.
They were flaunted. Yeah, I mean, she was wearing her little biker outfit with the rhinestones and the chaps and stuff like that. So
must have got that implant later on after the series.
Well, when she moved to Mars.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right. And then the one thing that really sets this in, firmly in the early 90s, is the use of the Danny Elfman theme, musical theme. And so, Josh, you found this cool comparison of Danny Elfman's superhero themes. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, now, I mean, it's pretty easy to recognize a lot of Danny Elfman songs. He's got a style of his own, you know. But this was, 1990, year after the Tim Burton Batman came out with, of course, the classic Danny Elfman score to that movie. But I thought it was more than just kind of a Danny Elfman style. I think it was actually very similar to the Batman theme. And as a matter of fact, similar to the Batman animated series theme, which you could tell was based heavily on the movie from Tim Burton, because they were trying to play off of that kind of that darkness there. So what I did is I took a little snippet of the Flash theme and the two Batman themes, just to put them side by side to compare what they sounded like, just to see if you could hear the really close similarities.
Okay, so let's listen to the clip from the Flash theme first.
Okay.
All right, so that was the Flash theme, and now we've got Batman, the Tim Burton film theme.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, I can hear the similarities definitely between those two. And then finally, Batman, the animated series. Wow, those, you know, I don't want to say he kept going back to the well, but very similar.
Well, and it, the way it kind of felt to me is that he was sort of going for a superhero kind of pattern or style, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. But that horn, that da-da-da-da, you know, that just that succession of horns there, it just sounded so similar. I almost kind of had hoped or wished that he had made Flash a little bit more unique.
Yeah.
And there was some in the middle of the song that was more unique, mm-hmm. but it still kind of played on that same idea.
Yeah, he is a really horny composer. one other thing I want to talk about while we're talking about the pilot, because this clip from the pilot is shown in the opening of every episode. And it is the part when lightning strikes Barry Allen and it explodes in front of him, the chemicals, and he is thrown back. And instead of just doing the stunt where he, like, falls backwards, they spring him backwards. And he catches his leg and buttock on the edge of a shelf and kind of is flipped sideways. It looks like it might have been a stunt that kind of went wrong. And when I watched it again, everything flashed back to me from when I was in college watching these episodes, where I'm like, oh my God, that looks like it hurt so much.
I was the same way back then and this time, every single time I see it. And I think watching it, I wonder, you know, if it was an accident of where they landed there, because that would have been a completely different superhero named, I don't know, the Popsicle or something. I wonder if it was an accident, and because it was so painful or so hard on the stuntman, if they included it in the title just because they're like, wow, man, that was
– we're going to pay you every time we show this because it hurts so much.
Just to pay you back, and we're really sorry about that. We'll put it in the title for you.
Yeah.
That'll be in there. But
all right. So let's move on, because we got 21 more episodes here to cover.
All right, well, we're not going to spend as much time. That sets up the series right there. That was the pilot.
Yeah.
All right, Out of Control, September 27th, 1990. The homeless of Central City are screaming and disappearing. Tina's former colleague has been using them as test subjects for a serum that will make you incredibly ugly and strong and ugly. Flash has to track them down before he strikes again.
Oh, wow. I hope he can do it. In this, there is a nice little shout-out. The police call in a report from the corner of Gardner and Fox, which is a shout-out to the Flash co-creator Gardner Fox. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I like that even in this series, as we see in some of the newer superhero TV series and movies, they are giving shout-outs to the comic genre where they all came from. So I think that's I think it's cool that they were doing it even back then.
This may have been one of the first ones, because I don't remember not that I was watching it with as a critical eye, but I don't remember like the Incredible Hulk or Wonder Woman, and especially not the old Batman 60s show doing anything like that. So
yeah. Well, you know, the 60s Batman show almost was a comic book just in it of itself.
True.
Just in the look and feel. But you're right. The Hulk, as a matter of fact, it went in completely different directions. I mean, his name wasn't even Bruce in the Hulk. So,
right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the first time they kind of started going toward that direction.
Yep.
So, all right, next episode, Watching the Detectives. Okay. This episode is going to be pretty important as far as characters go throughout the series here and there. So October 18th, 1990, corrupt District Attorney Castillo discovers the Flash's secret identity after a snoopy private investigator named Megan Lockhart and a potential date for Barry installs a camera, finds him out. So Castillo frames Barry to help him frame the mob. Of course, later on, they don't have to worry about his secret identity because, yeah, that DA is pretty much history.
I love the end of it because it basically he blackmails Barry into working as the Flash for him, to, you know, to do whatever he wants to do and put the thumbscrews into the mob. And, you know, Barry's like, all right, I did what you wanted. And he's like, no, you're going to keep doing what I wanted. The only way to get rid of me is to kill me. And then Barry, like, just stares at him as Castillo gets into a car, turns the ignition, and the car explodes. And Barry just stands there and is like, okay, go on. He just walks away.
Yeah, don't try to race it and get him out or anything. Just, yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, that you know, it's basically, it was like, you know, the guy says, you know, what could happen? You know, what bad could happen? And then, boom, he dies. So,
well, you know, at this time on TV especially, and you see it in the series especially, but there was a lot of conveniences in script writing,
yeah,
and things you just didn't question. And that was very, very common back then. It just TV did not have to be as realistic as people demand it now.
Well, and also the other thing, this series, due to a lot, it had a mixture of styles in it. So it was a technological show. You had Star Labs and all the stuff that was happening there, but it also had its roots in like 1950s style noir. Films and TV and stuff like that, because you had a lot of people driving older cars, and I mean it took place in 1990, and so you know there were still cars, older cars around, but not maybe necessarily that old, like maybe from the 70s. So
no, and I think that would probably be the influence of the success of Tim Burton's Batman, because it had similar kind of Art Deco feel to
correct.
It, and that older city feel.
Right. So this episode, among a number of other ones, was co-written by comic writer and artist Howard Chaykin, who you and I know as the artist for the Star Wars adaptation from Marvel, but he's also done he's pretty much done, I think, characters from every other, you know, series from Marvel and DC. Tina mentions one of her colleagues, Dr. Carter Hall, who happens to be the alter ego of the superhero Hawkman.
Can you imagine if they worked Hawkman in there later on?
I couldn't remember
maybe
if he showed up, and I was like, that's pretty cool. But, you know, just a tease. Unlike like in Arrow and in, I'm sure, in the new Flash series where they'll tease stuff like that, and then Hawkman really will show up.
Yeah.
The title of this episode, Watching the Detectives, it just happens to share its name with an Elvis Costello song from 1977. I'm not sure if that was on purpose. It's one of Elvis Costello's more popular songs. And then this episode marks the first appearance of Dick Miller's character, whose name is Foz Knight, and he's kind of a 2-bit hustler that is also an informant for Barry, and he makes 6 appearances, and people may recognize Miller from his many appearances in such as some of his Joe Dante films, like Gremlins and Small Soldiers.
Yeah. Dick Miller's another classic 70s and 80s actor that was just kind of a little bit part in so many different stories. So
yeah, he's great. And yeah, you see him and you go, oh, I recognize that guy, even if you don't know his name.
Yeah, and in this series, he was one of my favorite side characters. So I really liked him. So, all right, so next episode, Honor Among Thieves, October 25th, 1990. So a group of thugs plots to steal a valuable mask that would help a longtime mentor and father figure to Barry. But they're not truly after the mask. They're distracting the police for a much bigger score across the city that will force the Flash to have to run his most extensive race yet. Except, of course, they really are after the mask.
Oh, I hated this episode. This was...
It's a triple cross.
So this was also written by Howard Chaykin, or co-written by Howard Chaykin. And there was a part in it where Barry calls in a collision from the corner of 4th and Garrick, which probably was a shout-out to Jay Garrick, the original Golden Age Flash.
Yeah.
Not much else going on in this. This was not a great episode.
It was not my favorite either. So actually, but Howard Chaykin's were not some of my favorite episodes. But
yeah.
The next one, let's see, Double Vision. November 1st, 1990. Now, to keep a witness from testifying against a drug lord, the bad guys implant a chip inside Barry's brain to control the Flash and kidnap the witness's daughter. When Tina figures out a way to block the signal, though, the Flash races to the rescue and, of course, shorts out old Wirehead that's controlling him there.
Okay, so this takes place kind of in the barrio section of Central City during Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. And it's got a lot of things kind of like, well, I would say The Matrix, but it's more like Johnny Mnemonic, I guess.
Yes,
I
don't even know, yeah, more Johnny Mnemonic.
I don't even know if that came out. Lawnmower Man, it's a guy with a like a Nintendo Game Boy glove and virtual reality glasses who wires in. Okay, so they take control of the Flash by injecting this chip in his head, which the guy can see through the Flash's eyes and control the Flash's hands, yet he never bothers to take Flash's mask off to see who he really is. Okay, fine. Like you
wasn't
said,
a priority.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, you know, they never question certain things here in some of the older episodes. So,
and it was incredibly easy to control the Flash. I mean,
oh, yeah, you know, just because his metabolism sped up and everything like that. You know, it's just – that's how it works.
Yeah. But it was kind of fun. I didn't mind that episode. That was a fun one.
Right. So that was – and that was episode five.
Okay.
Right.
Now, episode six, Sins of the Father, November 8th, 1990. Okay. Here we go. When Johnny Ray Hicks, a convict with a harmonica theme, escapes prison – he goes after the man that put him there to begin with, Barry's father. Yes, Emmett Walsh. He gets to have a little storyline of his own here. Mm-hmm. See, now Mr. Allen thinks he can capture Hicks with the help of his old partner, but when that plan doesn't go so well, the Flash pulls on the red leather and rushes him right back where he belongs.
This was like Law and Order Metamucil. You've got these two old characters. Now, Emmett Walsh, I thought this was a great episode because he really got a chance to shine. He really only had little bits, and up to this point, he was just always pissed at Barry that Barry was a scientist and not a true police officer, and Jay was the real police officer, and now he's dead. And I think he kind of blamed Barry. But this episode, the sixth episode here, kind of buries that. No pun intended, actually. buries that storyline there because Henry finally sees Barry as more of an equal and realizes that Henry can't just, you know, be running around. He's not, you know, 30 anymore and can't be doing all the street work that he used to do and stuff. So,
well, it not only buries that issue, but I think it buries M. Emmett Walsh. I don't even think he appears in the rest of the series. It may have one or two, but I can't remember him too much after this.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true. We don't see too much of him because we start focusing on other stuff. But yeah, he does show up a couple other time, at least one more time. I will say, but
okay.
That's a good point.
Okay, but all right. Well, episode seven, Child's Play, November 15th, 1990. Sorry,
this is a good one.
Laugh out before. This is a good one.
Yeah.
All right. 60s druggie and leftover hippie Beauregard Lesko is selling the drug Blue Paradise. To the street folk of Central City. But when an orphan named Terry steals something important to both the police and Lesko, everybody wants him. Flash wants to expedite Terry's rescue and the happy hippie taking a little trippy before Blue Paradise is released into the entire city. Now, that might be hard while Flash is tripping himself, complete with sitar music. That is until Flash goes Jimi Hendrix with the electric guitar and saves the day.
Yeah, so he plays the guitar so hard and so loud and so fast that he makes everybody deaf. So,
rock and roll, baby.
Now, what was great about this is the actor they got playing Lesko, he really got into it. I mean, he was like really camping it up, but it was a good episode from that standpoint that it was different than the six before it. Now,
oh, yeah.
We weren't taking on a supervillain or anything like that. So let's just get to the point. So to date, Barry's taken on a bike gang, a computer hacker, a guy that works at a museum that's trying to steal the this mask, corrupt DA,
and an old
convict. Yeah. So I was telling somebody, basically he fights street thugs and social issues because this one he deals with basically teen homelessness with this boy Terry and his little sister actually. It was different enough because they had this outrageous kind of villain, which a guy running around in a red suit kind of needs to have these kind of outrageous characters that he has to deal with. Otherwise it doesn't really work too well. So I felt this started to get some of the tone that we would see coming up in later episodes. And I think this is kind of a key episode for the direction that the series ends up taking on more like the second half of the series. This is the first time the Flash actually vibrates through a wall because he was tripping out, man. which was cool, but it's the only time he did it.
Yeah, he never did it again. I was disappointed.
Barry is walking his dog, who I forgot to mention back in the pilot. We see his dog, this golden retriever, in most of the episodes. Earl is his golden retriever, and great acting by this dog. I think he does a solid job. So he walks his dog past one of the theaters in town, which is showing a double feature of Batman from 1989 and Superman from 1978. So that's a nice little shout out to the DC universe. Lesko's psychedelic love child assistant, is named Pepper. And she's played by Perry Reeves, who coincidentally appeared in the horror film Child's Play 3. No relation to the Child's Play title of this episode. And then Howard Chaykin also co-wrote this episode as well.
Yes, he did. All right. So I did enjoy that episode. It was very wacky, though. All right. Episode 8, Shroud of Death. Ooh, this sounds like a good one. November 29th, 1990. When a judge and a former DA are killed after receiving mysterious medals, Barry discovers that they were involved in the arrest of Jefferson Zacharias and his Warriors of Freedom, along with Lieutenant Garfield. Now, Flash has to stop the bad guy and keep Garfield in line before he goes too far. Garfield's kind of, he's getting out of control, wants to, you know, he's not thinking straight. He really wants to catch this guy.
Yeah, he wants to take matters into his own hands and basically, you know, throw down his shield and say he's not an officer and he just, you know, wants to do it for revenge. He also hates Mondays but loves lasagna. So that's pretty cool.
Well, yeah. Yes, of course. You know, this I kind of felt like this was the episode where they were starting to make Lieutenant Garfield more of the father figure or the not the mentor so much, but just the
the
character in the show that's the authority.
Right.
Know?
Well, he's the tough-as-nails police chief who's kind of soft on the inside but also goes really hard on him because he knows he can push the character. You know, it's like every other, you know, cop, mentor figure from the late 80s and 90s, you know, from Lethal Weapon to what's that Schwarzenegger film where he comes out of the movie? Last Action Hero, you know.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
But yeah, Garfield. This was the time that they gave that actor a chance to shine, and it was a nice episode too. Little hokey. Again, 8 episodes in, we still haven't fought any super villains, anybody from the comic books or anything like that. They've been more, and they're working on Barry's love life. Like I said, his assistant. What's his assistant's name that Alex plays?
Julio.
Oh, Julio. Julio Mendez. Julio's always trying to set Barry up with a different girl each week. So Barry kind of got together with Megan Lockhart back in episode 3, but that didn't work out because she had to leave. And And there's kind of a thing going between Barry and Tina, but, you know, it's more of a professional level. But there's, you know, sexual tension and stuff like that. So they,
oh, yeah,
they're really working on characters.
It's all like Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd moonlighting for this whole series.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. Yeah, so, but, you know, we still, like I said, we still haven't gotten to any kind of real serious villain kind of people. So
no, no.
All right.
Well, let's see. How about episode 9, Ghost in the Machine? December 13th, 1990, all right?
Yeah.
The 1950s, a time when men were real men, women were real women, and technological villains that try to extort the city with TVs were real technological villains that try to extort the city with TVs. After the vintage villain known as the Ghost returns from being frozen in time, but the old hero known as Nightshade comes out of retirement to help Flash recapture this terrifying television terrorist.
Oh, so there was a hero called Nightshade, but okay, so this is just somebody they created for the TV show. But
I guess so. Was I didn't really look to see there wasn't any other Nightshade in any comics or anything.
I don't think so. I mean, there are characters that are similar to him, but I don't think they were called Nightshade. I mean, he kind of had a little vibe of the Sandman because he used these tranquilizer darts to put people to sleep. He wore a mask.
He kind of reminded me of the Shadow.
Yeah, he was kind of like he was like a mix between the Batman, not just Batman, but like the, you know, the 1950s Batman, the Shadow. I mean, it was a 1950s style superhero, and he wore like these goggles that could kind of see in the dark. And played by I didn't put the name of the character actor that plays him, but this is one of the first episodes I watched a while ago, and when I got the idea that we should sit down and watch all these, and I couldn't even make it through this episode. It took the 8 previous episodes of desensitizing me to the way the series worked to make me be able to sit through this episode. Just, you know, again, it was just cheese ball. I mean, but again, you've got a guy supposedly, quote, from the 1950s. So he's, wow, we're living in the future. And look at these. Everyone's got a TV now, and I can beam my signal everywhere and stuff like that.
Yeah, it wasn't really, well, you know, it was very campy. It was very, very campy. Which
this one in particular, yeah.
Yes, which a lot of them were. But, you know, this one, yeah, I did feel, especially with the 50s villains and the way that what the villain was trying to do, what the ghost was trying to do.
Right. And now you made a note here that this was the first and actually only appearance of Gay and Frisky, which is a nightclub in this.
Yeah, it's a nightclub. Yeah, Gay and Frisky, Central City. I go there all the time. You don't know?
No, no, no. Oh. Was that for, like, homosexuals and cats or something? I don't know. It's like... I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe homosexual cats.
Okay, so this episode was also co-written by Howard Chaykin.
You're kidding.
It did have... Now, I don't want to say that all of his stuff was more cheese ball than some of the other ones, but lot of them were.
They were. They kind of remind me of the ones that Howard Chaykin wrote. It kind of remind me of the old Star Treks, you know, where they would go back to... some planet where it was ancient Earth time or something,
right.
You know, or
well, he was trying to put more of a comic book vibe, even if he wasn't allowed to use like comic book characters. Again, in this Starlog article I read, the producers were like, yeah, we want to use people, you know, like Weather Wizard and the Pied Piper and the Trickster. And I'm like, all right, 9 episodes in, let's see some of these people. So let's see what they get.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah. Okay, so next after that one is Sight Unseen, which aired January 10th. So this would have been after the little Christmassy break there. So did you see the one with the Invisible Man?
Huh?
No, of course not. No, he's invisible.
Oh.
So and he's out to close Star Labs and kill all the scientists that work on a deadly project. After releasing a neurotoxin and trapping Tina and her horrible boss inside the labs, Flash will have to move fast to save his friend. Luckily, you know, that's what he does, so...
Oh, good.
It's all good. No.
Yeah, Okay, not a... You know, basically, it's just like what they call a bottle episode. It was basically... took place mostly in Star Labs and right outside because, you know, they're trapped inside, and the... The FBI agent wouldn't believe, of course, that there was an Invisible Man, even though people had encountered him, it. And the FBI agent was like, well, you know what? If the people inside die, that's fine. We still get our hands on, you know, whatever technology we need to. And it's like, he was an ass.
No. Yes. Well, there's a couple things in this episode, you know, I started to realize very much. Number one, that the authority figures in this world, this universe of The Flash, you know, none of them are very logical or use any kind of, you know, evidence to support their
ideas. That is true. That shows up later.
The other thing is that Star Labs is a really horrible company that's doing a lot of very damaging things to the environment, to people, and to the world.
Except that Tina's the only one that works there, except in this episode when we see her boss. Because, like, she works these god-awful hours. Like, she's always the last one there, or it's the middle of the night, she's there. It's early in the morning, well, she's there. It's like...
In the pilot, it kind of established that she was unhappy. She was very sad because her husband had died, you know, doing something supposedly for Star Lab. So that would explain that then. But she's not all that unhappy anymore, but she's still working the graveyard shift, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, she gets to work with Barry, and he's, you know, he's very attractive, I think, to her, so...
Yeah, she needs to tell him that, but...
all right, so...
All right.
Much else happened in that
the clock.
One, though, so, yeah.
I like this next one.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Beat the clock. Now you gotta put yourself in a different time again for this one. All right.
All right.
Beat the clock. January 31st, 1991. Streets of Central City, a Quinn Martin production, starring Carl Malden and Michael Douglas. Tonight's episode, Beat the Clock. Okay, Carl Malden and Michael Douglas weren't in this one, but other than that, it was pretty much an episode of Streets of San Francisco. A jazz musician on death row has just hours before his execution.
I think not even hours. I think hour.
Hour. Okay.
1 hour.
Yeah. Cue bluesy saxophone music. Only problem is he's innocent. Now his friend and Barry's co-worker in the crime lab, Julio, will do anything he can to save him. They're going to need someone to help them save the day in a flash. I may be overusing that pun.
All right. So let's see. Well, let me go with the very strange inaccuracy here. So the Flash goes to talk to the guy who's stuck in jail. He just kind of walks into the jail cell and says, hey, man, I love your music and your saxophone and stuff, and I'm going to get you out of here. And I know we've only got an hour. And like, there are no cops. It's like a prolonged conversation for like the entire, you know, between commercial breaks. So
okay, wait. Something just occurred to me.
Yes.
Maybe that wasn't the only time he vibrated through walls. Maybe they just didn't show it in the series.
Well, there is that. There is that possibility. So,
I'm going with that.
Okay, that's cool. You go with that. So this jazz saxophonist, his name's Wayne Cottrell, and I got the feeling that it was like a long time ago that he got put into jail, but then he didn't look any different from his flashback, so I'm guessing it was probably just a couple months or maybe a year or something. Anyway.
They got good moisturizers in jail. It's, you know, it keeps your skin young.
He had a one-night fling with a woman named Susie Storm, who possibly may be a reference to Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman, except that that's, you know, from Marvel Comics, but again, comic book-related kind of reference.
Sure.
But Cottrell's true love, Linda Lake, who supposedly died as a result of him killing her, that's why he's in jail, was played by Angela Bassett, who, of course, has gone on to star in many movies. She actually does some singing in this because she's a vocalist with this jazz at this jazz club. But she also starred again in another DC property. She played Amanda Waller in the Green Lantern movie. So... that was
cool.
That was kind of. I didn't recognize her at first, and I'm like, "Yeah, lady looks familiar."
Yeah, she's younger in this. So, okay. All right. So we're gonna keep cruising on here, but the next one is a good one.
Yeah, because I was gonna say 11 episodes.
All right,
social issues and street crime.
All right. Well, the next one. Come on, you wanted comic book, The Trickster.
Woo!
All right.
Yes.
February 7th. It took him February 7th to get to this. All right. Here we go. A long time ago, in an asylum far, far away, escaped an insane man named James Jesse, a.k.a. The Trickster. Obsessed with Barry's friend Megan Lockhart, who you'll remember from watching The Detectives, Jesse transforms his magician's persona into The Trickster and cleverly catches Flash. All this and a love triangle, too.
Okay, so co-written by Howard Chaykin.
But, all right, I like this one, Howard.
But this was good. Mark Hamill is the trickster, which...
this was good. Mark Hamill, yes.
A.K.A. Luke Skywalker. I mean, this was one of the first things we had seen him in since the Return of the Jedi, I think.
Yeah. He did some Broadway stuff in between there, so...
But yeah, just not a lot of TV and movie and stuff. And this led to his iconic voice acting role as the Joker on Batman the Animated Series, because he was psychopathic on this show. He took the level of the trickster and, I mean, he just... really let it all out, and it really, after watching 11 episodes, like I said, with street crime and social issues, here comes this comic book villain, and Mark Hamill just did such a beautiful job of, you know, in the same way that, like, Jack Nicholson or Heath Ledger did the Joker in the Batman films, Mark took this to another level. So it was really fun to see it, and I think it made John Wesley Shipp up his acting level a little bit, and unfortunately it took him basically half the season. We are now in the second half of the season, but it's a great second half.
It is.
According to the executive producers Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo in their DVD commentary, if the show had been picked up for a second season, the premiere would have featured the Trickster, Captain Cold, and Mirror Master teaming up to take on the Flash. Captain Cold and Mirror Master we're going to be seeing here in just a couple episodes, so it makes me a little sad that they weren't able to continue on, but just a little bit, because now we get the chance to have a new Flash television show, which sounds like it's going to be great.
Yeah, and it did lead to the Joker, to Mark Hamill doing the Joker. So
classic stuff there. In an attempt to smoke out the Trickster, Barry issues a challenge to the Trickster to meet him for a Clash of the Titans at the Infantino Hotel. This is a nod to Carmine Infantino, a DC comic artist who was the creator of the Silver Age Flash, the Barry Allen character, which the series is based on. And he pretty much drew the Flash off and on all the way up through the mid-80s when the original Flash series was canceled, or Flash comic series was canceled. The Infantino Hotel would show up in subsequent episodes of The Flash, but there was really never any call-out for it. In his first appearance as the Trickster, James Jesse uses as a prop a statue of the Flash, which he painted to look like the Flash. I actually think it was a statue of Hermes, but he painted it to look like the Flash. But it's got a winged helmet and boots that looks very much like the Golden Age Flash. Flash ends up calling the Trickster Mandrake as kind of a nickname, which is Mandrake, the magician, is a character from the comic strips and circa Flash Gordon and the Phantom and stuff like that from the 40s. Megan's contact, who she calls to talk about the statuary, calls the statuary Freddie Mercury instead of just Mercury, right, the god. And, of course, Freddie Mercury was the lead singer of Queen and performer of Flash, the theme to 1980s Flash Gordon. So I thought that was cool.
Ooh, that's a good connection.
And this is a really interesting one. I don't know if they meant this, but Howard Chaykin was doing a Shadow comic series at the time. So the Trickster's warehouse is located on Margot Lane, and Margot Lane was the name of the Shadow's girlfriend.
Cool.
So there you go. All right, so now we're kicking off the second half of the season, and it's great so far.
Yeah, it is. I'm really starting to enjoy it now, okay? February 14th brought us Tina, Is That You? Now, when Barry's having these nightmares about Tina getting all, you know, black suit Spider-Man on him, you know, she's going crazy, she tries to help by using this biofeedback machine. What could go wrong?
Nothing.
That's the end. Everything works out.
Right.
Works, you know, no foreshadowing was involved in this episode. Oh, wait, no, I was wrong. Tina takes over a gang, robs some stuff, becomes bad, yada, yada, yada. The only thing missing here is, you know, her opposite dimension goatee.
Hmm. So she teams up with these other women in the Black Rose Gang, and in making a getaway, they are reported as driving north on Keystone Drive, which is presumably a nod to Keystone City, the home base of the original Golden Age Flash. In this episode, I'm really stretching for stuff in this one, Yvette Nipar, who is Barry's date, setup date for this one, she was the lead actress in another superhero film from this time frame called Dr. Mordred, which was originally conceived as a Doctor Strange film, but when the rights could not be secured, the premise and characters were rewritten slightly. So it's a really, it's a pretty bad B, maybe C, maybe D grade film. But if you watch it, think this would have been a Doctor Strange film, but it just had to change the name of the character. And it actually holds up as a Doctor Strange film, I think. Hmm. But of course, that's not related to The Flash here. So, no,
strange.
Yeah. Tina.
No, not my favorite episode.
No.
Be My Baby was the next episode. Episode 14, February 21st, 1991. Now, hey, come on now. What's more adorable than a muscular man in a tight red suit? Well, a muscular man in a tight red suit taking care of a baby.
A baby.
Yes. After baby, after Barry helps a woman who is raising the daughter of a mobster, he now has to stop that mobster from taking her back. And, of course, give her important life advice to put her on the right track on a very special after-school episode of The Flash.
Social issues. All right. So turns out Barry watches a lot of manly movies. You know, they had a lot of time to work with characters in this episode, but they reverted to a lot of shortcuts with just having characters, you know, talk about stuff. So he's watched all three Godfathers, The Guns of Navarone, The Great Escape, and Bullet. So those are some great films. Now, I'm watching this. The mobster comes out, and he's, you know, being a complete jerk and stuff. And I'm like, that guy looks – holy crumb. It's Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad as the villain with a full head of hair and looking like he's like 20. So he plays the bad guy, Philip Moses. I posted a picture to our Scarlet Velocity Facebook page if you guys want to check it out because – my gosh, he is so young. He made it enjoyable turn in this episode because, I mean, he was kind of cheeseballing it up as well. And I think he did the best he could with the material. Again, we just had the trickster. And now we've got social issues.
All right. Speed Man and a Little Baby episode?
Yeah.
Is that... All right. Well, let's fast forward a little bit.
Okay.
To episode 15. Fast forward.
Right. You just said that. We're going to move on to episode 15.
Yeah. All right. Episode 15. Fast forward. We'll keep going.
Okay.
This episode, February 27th, 91. Now, when Jay Allen's murderer and my least favorite villain in the series, Nicholas Pike, is released from jail.
Oh, he had great scars on his face, though. He's like, arr, and he was, arr.
Yeah. That ponytail made him look really mean.
Sexy.
Barry decides to leave Central City. He's so upset that this guy was released from jail when the evidence was so clear. But then Barry is sent into the future after running from Pike's attacking missile. And he discovers that Pike has become mayor and turned Central City into a dystopian nightmare.
Right. Yeah. Because that works.
Now he needs the help of all of his hairier friends in the underground that is led by his nephew and who's now older, of course,
right,
and get sent back to the future. I mean, the past to defeat Pike.
So, yeah. So 10 years into the future, Julio just hasn't cut his hair. He's got dreadlocks going everywhere. Lieutenant Garfield,
which has, you know, that happens to people.
Well,
you know, just forget.
Well, I mean, you're on the run, you know, hiding underground and, you know, did they put a barber in the underground with them? No.
That was the first thing Pike outlawed was barbers.
Barbers.
He only had one barber who cut off his ponytail 10 years in the future. So.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and he actually has less hair in the future because he's a respectable,
he's got the only barber.
Supervillain or whatever. Right. Lieutenant Garfield is like crazy now.
and has a mustache.
Tina's very upset that Barry just left. Like, she hasn't seen him in 10 years. First thing she does is slap him. Though, this episode does deal with time travel, which is a really important aspect of the Flash comic books. It just didn't do it very well.
No, wasn't too good. It would have been better as maybe a two-parter, you know? Spread out the whole idea. It was just a little too convenient. But.
And it was, of course, that kind of weird fake 1990s, like, this is what the future is going to be like, and it's horrible. And so.
Yeah, well, you know, it got that right at least.
Yeah. All right, but I feel I feel like we're about to have an upswing.
We are.
It's got to get
better. Now I actually I like this sequel to one of the earlier episodes, episode 16, Deadly Nightshade.
Yes.
Which I'm thinking they just named Nightshade just so they could do a Deadly Nightshade. But, March 30th, 1991. Oh, it's going to be spring break here. So now the 50s hero Nightshade has returned. But now, you know, he's killing bad guys. But this vigilante, he's not the original. He's Deadly Nightshade. And he's killing bad guys to atone for his father's crimes. Now Flash and the original Nightshade are going to team up to stop him.
I like the team-up aspect, and just to be clear, Deadly Nightshade is not related in any way to the original Nightshade.
No, not at all. No, when I said he's atoning for his father's crimes, it's not Nightshade's crimes. It's the guy that actually is playing Deadly Nightshade. Yeah, see, this was hard. That was the part Howard Chaykin wrote, that's why.
Yeah, right. So Howard Chaykin, co-writer on this. This was fun, though, because it's so this was one of the first episodes that actually brings some stuff back from earlier episodes, which was really cool. The Deadly Nightshade, he's a very polite criminal. when he calls, he asks for Lieutenant Garfield, please.
Yeah. I can't remember if that was that was Steve at the beginning. The first criminal that Deadly Nightshade killed.
He
had kidnapped the girl. And he's like, yeah, now we're going to get her. Let me call. I'm going to tell the police. Lieutenant Garfield, please. Sorry, that just struck me as funny. I had to put that in there.
Yeah. So this episode, Barry's kind of girl of the week for this episode is Denise Crosby from Star Trek The Next Generation. And she is... she's a reporter or I can't remember. She's trying to catch the Deadly Nightshade.
No, she was a, I think she was like a psychologist that worked with,
oh, that's right.
The
she
original
worked with
Nightshade. Yeah,
that's right. She was trying, and she was trying to figure out what made the Flash, the Flash. But we've got a big Star Trek theme on this one because also the girl that was kidnapped at the beginning of the episode was a young Jerry Ryan from Star Trek Voyager, a.k.a. Six of Nine, or mm-hmm. Five of Nine.
Seven of Nine.
Okay.
Well, back then she was Five of Nine.
She was Five of Nine.
You know, she was younger.
Right.
I did not even recognize her.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then I started going, well, I need to go and look at like the cast list on all these because maybe I'm missing somebody else. Which also, the Deadly Nightshade character has this exoskeleton, which makes him a little Borg-like, which is also kind of a Star Trek thing. And he wears that so he can travel or he can move fast to keep up with the Flash. Nightshade, the original Nightshade, also mentions that Foz Knight was short timing for Gorilla Grodd at one point. So a reference to another Flash villain there, which we never see or hear about again. In researching police files on the Nightshade, Lieutenant Garfield reads a confidential statement from police captain Julius Schwartz. Schwartz was one of the creators of the DC Comics character of the Silver Age Flash, and he also went on to do editing and other work with DC throughout its many years. And then also...
how about a little flub here? This is good.
Yeah, this is why don't you go ahead and tell this one, because I didn't even catch this.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Klein, who, man, there's an irritating character throughout the series. What's the actor's name?
Oh, I'll have to look it up. Yeah,
you look it up. All that.
He's a Klein's comedy
TV
actor.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, his TV show is at 10 p.m. in the evening, and they broadcast live. But when Tina and Barry are watching it at Barry's apartment, it's like broad daylight outside the window.
Yeah. So it's Richard Belzer, the comedian.
Richard Belzer, that's right.
Yeah. So, he's on pretty much every episode, always getting in someone's face with a camera, and Barry's always telling him to bug off and stuff like that.
Right.
So, this was a good episode. You had a guy who had some superpowers because it's exoskeleton, and you had this team-up. You brought back Nightshade, which was a fun character. Basically, it said he'd retired in the first episode. Now he actually comes out of retirement to help Barry because he feels like he owes him. So, that was really cool. It had a little bit of a Green Hornet vibe to it, kind of when Batman and Green Hornet teamed up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that. I didn't even realize that, but that's true. So, but it doesn't compare to the classic villains. Okay, so let's get into some classic villains. In episode 17, same title of the character, Captain Cold. All right. Very classic Flash rogues gallery villain, right? April 6, 1991. Now, there's a new mobster, and he's using Captain Cold to get rid of all the other multiculturally diverse mob leaders in Central City.
Let me just say, we've got the Italian mobster. We had the Jamaican mobster. We had the Asian mobster.
Oh, yeah.
And then, was that it?
I think there was one.
And then
more.
There was a four. Then just like the white guy.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, it was bad. Okay, continue.
Well, anyway, he has had another challenge for the captain though, is freeze the Flash. So ice proves to be a really real challenge for the Scarlet Speedster. But Tina's going to help him deal with some sub-zero temperatures and stop the bad guy. But who will save the world from Officer Murphy's autobiography? That was a major storyline in this.
Yeah, so there's actually a subplot in this one, which was great. So I thought that was cool. All right, so Michael Champion, who plays Captain Cold, again, recognized the guy, but I couldn't place him. He's better known for playing Richter's right-hand man, Helm, in the 1990 Total Recall, another Total Recall call-out. And the aforementioned Dr. Mordred movie I was talking about starred this episode's Jeffrey Combs, who was the mobster that hired Leonard Snart to hit the Flash. So, got all sorts of things here. And then Barry refers to Terry Cronenberg, who's the girlfriend, date in this episode, as Lois Lane, obviously Superman's girlfriend there.
I'm not sure why he was interested in her.
Yeah,
she was very appealing.
And I was wondering if Cronenberg was kind of a shout out to director David Cronenberg, but I don't know.
Oh, I don't know either.
Could be.
Real quick before we go to episode 18, I want to say I really actually thought Michael Champion I thought he was really good as Captain Cold.
He was really good. And I couldn't remember if Captain Cold came back. And so they put him in jail. And then, it's like, it looks like he's going to break out. And then I looked and I'm like, oh my God, there's still like 10 minutes left of this episode. So he breaks out of jail with these cool little freeze pellets and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't that too was campy cool. Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze or...
No, not at all.
The old Batman, now, Mr. Freeze.
One thing, you mentioned that he would have played in the season premiere, or I guess, I don't know if it's premiere, but he would have been in season two. Mm-hmm. But in the end, didn't he die? Didn't they say, take this corpse out of here or something like that?
I can't remember now.
I think he did, but you know what? He was frozen, so
right.
maybe he
I think because Barry made his... Yeah, he was frozen because Barry made his... Because he was using a nuclear backpack, accelerator. He crossed the streams, and it exploded. And
well, he reflected it back onto him. So. Yeah. All right, let's keep going here. Episode 18, Twin Streaks. Isn't that a restaurant where they have scantily clad... No, that's Twin Peaks. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Twin Streaks was April 13th, 1991. Barry isn't suddenly aging and needing Grecian formula hair color. Instead, a mad scientist named Jason Brassel has created a clone of Barry to sell super-fast soldiers for a quick profit. But the childlike reverse Flash, quote-unquote, is dangerous, so Barry has to figure out a way to reverse the damage. Or is that fast-forward the damage? Oh, no, wait, that was a different episode, wasn't it? Mm.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, this title is kind of a play on Twin Peaks, though it really has nothing to do with Twin Peaks. I think it just kind of rhymes.
Authority
figures, as we mentioned, this guy, so you've got the scientist who does the science and then the businessman. And the businessman's like, we can't do this. We can't keep just creating all these people. They're going to kill somebody. And he's like, you worry about the business. I'll worry about the science. And I don't care. And we'll sell these and make millions. It's like, oh, my, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's just
no.
There's nobody else around. The world feels really small, right, because there's no other characters to interact with, just these, just whoever the characters are in the episode we're in. So
I greatly disliked the scientist in this episode. Everybody else I actually was okay. Even young childlike Barry I had no problem with.
He did a good job. It reminded me a little bit of Michael Keaton's turn in Multiplicity as Clone 4. It's like, my name's Thieve.
Hi, Thieve.
John Wesley Shipp appears as Pollux, Barry's clone, which, wow, okay, so Romulus and Remus, Pollux, it's all Yeah. And as you point out here, you know, he looked just like him, too. He did a really good job.
Yeah,
but clone actually may not be the right word. Instead, the scientist calls them replicants, a la Blade Runner. Now, he says they're replicants that he cloned. At this point, I don't think anybody really understood what a clone was. See Star Wars The Clone Wars for more information.
Yep.
Now, this is the first episode, 18, where they change the speed effects around a little bit, and they're actually a little bit better. In previous episodes, if Barry needed to do something like stack a bunch of books on the shelf, they filmed John Wesley Shipp stacking books on a shelf, and then they just ran it at like 4 times speed, so you saw everything. In this one, they actually added motion blur for him moving around, and then would make it so like he'd be stacking stuff, but then there'd be a blur and a bunch of stuff would be done, and then he'd do some more. So they were starting to get the hang of the effects here. It was getting a little better. It was kind of cheesy early on. And when he ran, it was just like he was walking really fast, you know, in some of the episodes. It's not as cool as some of the footage we've seen of like Grant Gustin running, where it looks like he's really running. So
it really does. Yeah. I'm looking forward to those effects. So, and of course you got the, Tina, you know, standing there, and somebody, you know, cue the leaf blower into her hair. So it looks like he ran away real fast.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I think that happened every episode. But
yeah. So anyway, this was getting better. We're only, you know, we've only got like 4 more episodes left in the series, but it's starting to get kind of good now.
It is. And this was a very good one with a classic villain done with mirrors. Mm. April 27th, 91, The Mirror Master.
Yes.
You cannot leave the Mirror Master out of a Flash story. The Mirror Master has stolen a very expensive and powerful crystal from Star Labs. An old high school acquaintance and another woman in Barry's life. He's such a playa. She's involved in this crime. But even Flash can't run fast enough if you don't know what you're really running at.
Mm. So this was, again, co-written by Howard Chaykin, but this one, very much like the Trickster episode, was great. And I think it had to do with they got a really good actor to play Mirror Master. He was played by the Partridge Family heartthrob David Cassidy, who is the real-life father of Starling City's Laurel Lance, a.k.a. Katie Cassidy, on Arrow. So how's that to, like, bring it all around right there?
Nice.
So Barry mentioned...
He did a good job. I want to say, he did a good job. I really liked him as Mirror Master.
Even with his little ponytail, a 90s ponytail that he had going
well,
there.
I liked his acting, not his hair.
Yeah. So Barry mentions and actually pretends to be a character called Professor Zoom in this... Professor Zoom, a.k.a. Edobard Thane, a.k.a. Reverse Flash, in the comic books. I thought John Wesley Shipp did a good job with that, as, you know, doing this kind of outrageous kind of like Eastern European / French accent.
I think that character hung out at Gay and Frisky sometimes too.
Yeah. you mentioned that this may be the last TV show ever to have featured a cigarette girl.
The Mirror Master's projection of the cigarette girl in the bar.
Yeah, that was great.
I couldn't believe that when I saw that. I'm like, what are we watching, MASH? What does take place in 1950? What?
And then this features Tina's mom, Jocelyn Weller. They don't explain why she's got a different last name. I guess because Tina had been married, is my assumption, that Weller was Tina's original name. Carolyn Seymour, again, looked familiar. She went on to play Zoe, the evil leaper, in Quantum Leap. There's a mistake here. The girl that was Barry's high school friend, Stasia, actually calls Sam, aka the Mirror Master, Tom, at one point on the phone. I couldn't quite figure that one out. And then Sidney Coleman, who plays Stasia, actually went on to appear the next year in another DC comic property that was very short-lived, I think only 7 episodes, The Human Target, which starred Rick Springfield.
Ooh, another teen heartthrob.
Yes, and that was not a great show. But
okay, Rick Springfield wasn't a great singer.
We're into the home stretch here.
All right, Good Night Central City, episode 20, May 4th, 91. Harry Milgram is a horrible crook until his incredibly smart, scientific cousin, Roger Braintree. Wait, seriously?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Until his brainy cousin creates a device that puts people to sleep. Then he's a horrible crook with a device that puts people to sleep. and he's going to put everyone in Central City to sleep while he breaks a lot of glass.
There was a lot of glass breaking, yes.
and steal stuff, of course, oh, but, right. You know, mostly glass. now Tina discovers that if the sleepy citizens of Central City stay asleep for 2 hours, they could die. Meanwhile, Internal Affairs wants to put Barry in jail because it's easier than really investigating. Barry can stop Harry Milgram easily if he manages to stay awake.
Yeah, the authority figure that won't listen to any kind of reason. It's like, oh, yeah, obviously Barry's involved with the crimes here. It was very easy to frame him, too.
Yes. So. Clearly, Barry is involved because his name rhymes with Harry.
Yeah.
This is the biggest dope I've ever seen.
I mean, you're shouting at the screen because it's kind of stupid.
Yes.
But Roger Braintree is played by Bill Mumy in this, who is better known, I don't know if you recognize him, but it's Will Robinson from Lost in Space.
I didn't recognize him until you said it, and then I'm like, oh, my gosh, it is.
Yeah, he got old. I mean, you know, he's, I don't know, he was early 30s or whatever. He's supposed to have been a high school friend of Barry's.
Yeah, but he got shot, too, poor guy.
Yeah,
he got shot.
And then everybody went to sleep, and then Harry went kind of nuts at the end, which was, I thought the guy did a nice job being nuts at the end. I mean, that was interesting, but...
Yeah, I didn't mind him. I mean, he was a horrible crook, and you know, was kind of a cheesy little character. But I didn't mind him. He was okay.
There were some good things about this episode, but like you said, there were frustrating things happening here too.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Was this co-written by Howard Chaykin? No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
All right. Well, episode 21. Only a few more here. Alpha, May 11th, 1991. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Alpha. Now, do androids dream of electric sheep? Well, maybe when they have time, but right now the android Alpha is too busy running from the government to sleep. But Barry and Tina will help her, with the help of the ex-con and current informant, Fosnight. He's back, and they're going to have to do it before the other more bulky, more Swedish android Omega beats her up. And, you know, before the little bomb in her head goes off.
This was a mix of so many different things, like the Terminator and... like AI, but before AI, I guess. But I thought Dick Miller as Fosnight, he got a chance to really shine in this episode because he actually takes Alpha in to his care and also uses her for cheating at poker because she has X-ray eyes and stuff like that.
This was the episode that I realized that how much I liked Fosnight.
Yes, because he had something to do. I mean, and the other ones, he would just show up for a few minutes and Barry would be like, Fosnight, I told you. And he's like, I'm sorry. And it's like, don't arrest me. And Barry's like, not this time, but next time. Why you? Interesting. Omega, who's played by Sven Ole Thorsen, who is, people will recognize him as a common heavy in Arnold Schwarzenegger films. You know, and he sounds like the Terminator in this when he comes to kill.
I recognized him from Running Man.
Yes. Yes, he was in Running Man. Well, you also should have recognized him as the Swede, but he had a beard, and he was in the episode right before this. He was working with Harry.
And I watched these episodes back to back, so I did see.
Yeah.
Like, hey, isn't he? What is? Okay, well, whatever.
And then there's a scene in Fosnight's apartment where Alpha's there, and he's confirming with her if she actually has X-ray eyes. And he asks Alpha what color underwear he has on, and she answers correctly, red, which would seem to be a nod to 1978 Superman the movie when Lois Lane asks Superman the same question, and he says pink. So,
coincidentally, they were actually the same, different color, same pair of underwear from Victoria's Secret. So. Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention. I didn't put this in the show notes, but real quick. Did you notice in the last three or four episodes here, they've used the same painting, the big mural painting, but they're always in like a different building. One's in the courthouse.
No.
they just shows up in different places around Central City. But
I was going to point out that every time they show a running montage from Barry's point of view, he's always running down the same streets at the same time of night, and then there's always construction, and he starts to turn, and then we're on another street somewhere.
It's the running loop that they use.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so here we are. This is it. The grand finale here, episode 22,
okay.
The Trial of the Trickster. May 18th is when this series ended, 1991. But the Trickster has returned. He is on trial for his insane antics. James Jesse shows no sign of leaving the Laughing Academy behind anytime soon. And then he's suddenly freed from jail by Harley Quinn. I mean, Prank, a crazy toy store heiress who's obsessed with Cuckoo McCookerson. now, what's even worse is that he captures Flash and he brainwashes him to run amok and terrorize the city.
Oh, no.
I know. Yeah, it's really easy to brainwash Flash. Megan Lockhart and Tina are on the case, though. And they're victorious, of course. The Trickster is locked away in a padded cell, and our Scarlet Speedster bids his final farewell to this short-lived series by kissing Lockhart goodbye and dedicating his powers to the city that he loves.
Juan, this so the whole series they've been talking about, is the Flash real? Because no one's really ever seen him. And finally, they erect a sign at the end that says, Central City, home of the Flash. And they use the Flash logo for it. This episode made me a little sad. I'm like, oh, now it's starting to get good. Why did they cancel it?
I know.
So
I'm watching this episode, and I thought, you know, we should do a Flash podcast. And then I realized, oh, it's over.
Oh. Well, this episode was also written by Howard Chaykin. Mark Hamill was back as the Trickster, doing an incredible job. And John Wesley Shipp did a great job, because they both played off each other, especially once Flash got brainwashed. He was doing all sorts of kooky stuff and, you know, like destroying things in the city at super speed. And it was good.
Ready to paint the town red.
Yes. And they had all sorts of really cool gags, like there was some bubblegum glue that the Trickster spreads out across the street to stop the Flash, and he falls face first in it and gets stuck. And then when the Trickster's in prison, he's wearing his orange prison uniform, and he's got all the colors out of his hair, but it's kind of spiked up in front. I thought he looked a lot like Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons. And I don't know if that's just a coincidence or... You know, because Simpsons was on, they would have introduced that Sideshow Bob storyline, or maybe they were trying to go for that. So,
I don't know. He was all sorts of crazy, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
he was scary.
But a good episode. I would say, in my opinion, if anyone was to go back and want to watch some of these episodes, I think you should probably watch the first episode just to get the intro of the characters. Though it's kind of long, and there's some parts that aren't great. I would recommend watching the two Trickster episodes and Done with Mirrors. And the Captain Cold one. I would say those are probably the best ones.
Yeah, the Rogues Gallery there. Yeah, yeah. You gotta get that. So, I agree with you. And you know, if it only had to last one season, this was a good episode to end it on. It ended on a high note.
Yeah, definitely. So, why did it get canceled, Josh?
Well, I think one of the main reasons it got canceled was just bad timing. It was on, like you said earlier, it was on during the Cosby Show, which was, you know, like the biggest show, not just of the time, but the biggest show ever, you know, back then. And it was on also during The Simpsons. I mean, I remember I'd had to tape The Flash in another room because my family was watching The Simpsons, you know. So I think that was part of the reason. Also, because of that, you know, they kind of moved it around, so it wasn't on the same day the whole season. And you know, it wasn't the best written show. It was kind of bad, but you know what? I didn't know that at the time. It fit the era of TV.
Right.
There were some cheesy parts, but that wasn't out of the ordinary back then.
There are parts that seem really corny now, but yeah, they probably weren't too bad then. It is, like you had mentioned earlier, it's a lot like the 1989 Tim Burton Batman. It borrowed a lot from that style, from the set design to the costume design to the mute theme music. But it kind of went off in its own way, and it never really took itself too seriously. But yeah, I was watching some of them with my kids, and they were just like, I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. Well, I'm watching this, you don't have to.
But the superheroes and superhero stories and shows and movies have evolved, and I think they've evolved because of shows and movies like this. So I really did kind of like it once I sort of got back into that feeling. So I do recommend it. If you're a fan of the history of comic books and you're okay with different eras of comic books, this is a different era of comic book storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so I do recommend going back to it. You just got to get yourself in the mindset of when it was on.
Like I said, it's got a little bit of a 50s vibe to it overall, just in terms of like the way the 1950s comic books were. Mm-hmm. Just very like, mm-hmm. It's very punched up. It's kind of hyper real, I guess, to that extent. It's not as gritty as like what I think we've gotten used to now with the Batman films and Arrow and, you know, the new Flash seems like it's going to be a little bit lighter, so we'll have to see how that goes. So this show, the 1990 show, compared to what we hope to see in the new series, you know, it was campy, but I think they had a good sense of humor, and there were characters that were literally trying to be funny sometimes, but there was also, you know, humor from situations that people would poke fun of, and, you know, It almost sometimes you felt like that needed that little musical sting just to go wah wah,
yeah,
in there.
Well,
so
in the new series, I think humor is okay. I think it really fits the character of the Flash and the history of the Flash. But when it's appropriate, you know, sometimes it's going to be serious. It needs to be serious, so you want to keep that out of it. You know, that's one thing I'd like to see in the new series.
Yeah, the Starlog article I read, the producers were saying they didn't want to do a Villain of the Week sort of show, mm-hmm. but what they ended up doing was a Villain of the Week show.
Very, very much so.
They had a couple people that did, you know, return a kind of an ongoing, you know, ongoing bad guys like we know from like Arrow and things like that. The Trickster, you know, he was starting to do that. Pike came back again, but, you know, let's not talk about him. But... You know, characters don't have to all have superpowers.
That's right.
It sounds like the new Flash show is setting it up that way because there's kind of this release of I think the trailer I saw was like X Elements or something like that.
Yeah, something like that with the particle accelerator. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to see in the new series, okay, it sounds, based on the list of characters that we've heard are going to be in this, it sounds like they're going to have an awful lot of villains. So hopefully it's not a Villain of the Week thing. But if they do have those, you know, every so often, they need to have an ongoing bad guy, mm-hmm. Somebody that is a threat throughout the season, like they did with say, Deathstroke, you know,
right.
or with Malcolm Merlyn in Arrow. So, and like I said, you know, that you said they don't have to all have superpowers to be a challenge for Flash. So mm-hmm. you don't have to get everybody that has been changed by the particle accelerator for Flash. Have some other people that are also challenges for him.
Yeah. You know, he can deal with the homeless of Central City and
orphans,
maybe battered women, something. I don't know. Well, the new series hopefully will have a little more, you know, modern storytelling style and dialogue. Obviously, there's a lot of dialogue from the 90s show that seems really dated, but, you know, now we're living in the 21st century. So hopefully, you know, everything will be updated. I think, though, that, again, like I was saying, because they seem to have this kind of hyper-realistic or hyper, you know, style to the 90s show, they were probably writing it with that kind of voice. So I don't even know that that was necessarily appropriate of some of the other shows at the time, because, like, Quantum Leap, which was out around that time as well, like, you know, that was not as goofy. But it had its funny parts and its kind of goofy parts and stuff and silly things going on in it as well. So,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can look forward to that. So
not the 90s anymore. So I think they'll update it. They know they've got good writers on it.
Right. And of course, we hope it'll have a more believable hero. But of course, you know, it's coming from the Arrow universe. We've already been introduced to Barry. He seems like a likable guy, a guy that we can understand, you know, getting superpowers and, you know, wanting to do more with them, you know, because he's already a police officer, you know, helping investigate stuff. And we seem to understand from the trailers and from Barry's, discussions on Arrow that, you know, there's more to it. Like, he also gets a chance to maybe understand who killed his mom, because there's that larger mystery that seems like it's going to be part of the, you know, an ongoing arc for the season, whereas the 1990s Flash, except, again, in very small doses, each episode was independent of another, and you can just kind of go in and watch any episode. Didn't matter what happened before or after.
Right. Yeah. And for this one, I think it'll be much more linear storytelling. And I want to see them build him as a hero. I want, much like you know, Oliver Queen did, I want him to learn how to be a hero. It's just good character development that on TV you can really stretch out in a good way.
Yeah, because instead of doing just like a 2-hour movie or a 2-hour and 20-minute movie or something like that, they'll have 22, 23 episodes to be able to build that up. So it should be cool.
I am so excited to get this series started. I've been looking forward to it. It is going to be so much fun, and I'm going to have a really, really good time talking about it with you.
I am as well, and I know Flash is like your, you know, uber number one favorite comic book character, so I'm glad that we get a chance to talk about him here.
I am too. But, well, for now, though, Jay and I have to run.
And if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to leave us feedback on iTunes. You can also contact us by email at our email address for this particular show, scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter at scarletvelocity or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/scarletvelocity.
Yeah, and start spreading the word now. Let's get word out about our show and about The Flash, and let's just make this huge so we can share with everybody. You can also make sure you check out our other shows, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files via randomchatter.com. So check us out there, too. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please make sure you tell your friends. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.